Hey, this is Mitch Tite, joining you from the studios of North Country Public Radio in Canton, New York. You might remember me from Milwaukee Public Radio's longtime program, Lake Effect. I am here to lend my professional radio announcer voice to this piddly little podcast in an effort to bring it some legitimacy. I am afraid, however, that even the considerable level of gravitas that I add will not be enough. It's Season 7 of the Bait and Switch Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bait and Switch Podcast. It's Chris Beyer, as always, with Jim Martin. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Chris.
I've got you doing a task here.
Yep, I'm task-oriented right now.
Yeah, tonight, yep. This is a production line, what we got going here.
It really is, yeah. We got things rolling here today. Normally, it's pretty relaxed here.
Yeah, but no.
Tonight it feels like, come on, we got to get going. We got to stay on task. We got to hit the times, all that stuff.
We got two guests here tonight. The first guy was a little bit late, and then you've got to leave a little bit early, so we're kind of crunched in either time. So these episodes will be a little shorter than typical, but I think we'll get some good stuff here tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned last episode that I've been hanging out at our friend Matt Kempel's comedy club and meeting a whole bunch of people here in the comedy. That was the original focus of this podcast, so it's a great thing, meeting a lot of people.
Originally, we were funny.
Now we're bringing the funny people.
Right.
So our second guest tonight is a local comedian, John Behrens. He's part of a comedy family here that's well known in the area. Welcome, John.
Welcome, John.
Howdy, Chris. Howdy, Jim. How are we doing tonight?
Great. You?
I'm so far holding in there. It's been a good night. Busy night, but it has been a good night. Good.
Yeah, you did a set, and then you came here, and you're going to leave here and do another set.
That's the hope. No rest for the wicked, right?
That's right.
So, again, like our last guest, comedy, this is your first option. Is there a backup plan, or comedy is your life?
You know, comedy is mainly my it's my main inspiration right now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I've been in many different positions in the past. I've worked as a customer representative. I have worked as a salesman for a furniture company, then a delivery man for that same furniture company. Okay. Now I work as a production assistant and editor. So I keep my options open, but largely, comedy is something that really fuels my drive.
Right. And we're bearing a little bit of lead because your last name might be familiar to some of our listeners, John Behrens, brother of Charlie Behrens.
That would be correct.
The editing and production is for his videos.
That is correct. I do work full time with my brother. We run over sort of bits, skits, and what have yous, whatnots, all around Wisconsin. We're based in Milwaukee. We make some really good bits here. But in between that, we also go on tour all across the United States.
Okay. And you go on tour with him?
I do, yes. Okay. I will go to certain shows. We have like a little we divvy up the lineup here and there. Mm-hmm. So he has a sort of a rotating assortment of comedians, entertainers, and production assistants who go to different locations with him.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize you guys. I mean, I know he's well known, but I didn't realize you guys are touring all over the nation. That's awesome.
Absolutely, it's a really nice deal. You know.
Yeah. Definitely.
And is there a tour starting here pretty soon?
There is. We are going to be coming up. I believe it will be in April or possibly late March.
Okay.
We are coming to the Riverside Theater of Milwaukee for one weekend. We have four shows there, two on Friday, two on Saturday, and we are going to be going all around the better part of the state. It's Wisconsin. There is no such thing as a worse part of the state. So it's all better parts, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
But no, we're going to be hitting up some big population areas like Madison.
Nice.
We're going to be hitting up Green Bay at the Rush Center. And we're going to make it go around everywhere we can.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I just saw Charlie in a commercial, you know, doing the Packers thing. And now, when you say you do like production and stuff and video editing and that kind of stuff, is that for YouTube or where do these videos end up?
So these videos, we do it on a multi-platform basis.
Okay.
So we'll go for, I believe, 6 to 7 major platforms. And those ones would be Facebook, Instagram, or as we call it, Meta.
Okay.
any Meta subsidiary, including Threads. We're branching out to Threads.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We also run them along TikTok, YouTube, bring them on to Twitter, and that's our major gambit right there.
Let me sound uneducated about these things. You make money doing this.
We do, yes. So in these terms, after a certain threshold, YouTube does help you out with ad money and certain subscriptions, endorsements, all that jazz. Every single platform buys for these similar endorsements, or they have means of letting the watchers, the viewers, support you directly, as opposed to using advertisement money or endorsement money for that.
Right.
So every single ad has like different sensibilities that we need to cater towards.
Right.
And that can range from anything from like what material is allowed on those platforms, as opposed to things like on some platforms, we cannot go above a minute for certain videos. Okay. So we will have to make different versions for those videos.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Or we'll otherwise just have to, we'll have to figure out different means of what ingratiates itself to that app's primary viewers.
Right.
For example, for TikTok, we're going to go for a slightly more to the punch, quick, rapid fire type of jokes. For YouTube, that would be something where people, by and large, try to go for something that lets the jokes land, so to speak. So
right.
gives a little bit more time for the blows to be absorbed.
Okay. Okay. Oh, cool.
Is there one app that is better than the other in terms of just did you make your majority of your stuff on, or is it spread out throughout in terms of is one pay better than the other, I guess what I'm getting at?
I would say that information isn't necessarily privy to me.
Okay.
But it is very much the information of like, by and large, as long as your views are up, then you're doing something right.
Right.
And on every app, we do our best to make sure that people will stay for the whole video.
Right.
Not just the first 30 seconds. You know, right. we want to give them something to go off of.
Right.
Yeah. Do you guys do advertising too on those platforms?
Advertising on our end, or we have people who advertise for us?
I guess, do you advertise yourselves? You know, like for his shows and
little maybe, something on the bottom that says
maybe the YouTube channel or something.
That does actually bring up an interesting point. By and large, we don't advertise with our platforms. Mm-hmm. Rather, our platforms are by and large the advertisements.
Okay.
So we will have stingers in many of our big videos. Are what we will call long form videos. As opposed to short forms, which are usually 30 seconds to a minute. Our long form videos usually are anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes, and usually consist of a overarching plot. But towards the end, we incorporate a screen that details anything from what tickets for local shows we have available to what merchandise we're wearing inside the production that you can buy on manswalkminute.com.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
That website again?
Oh, that would be manswalkminute.com. That's a manitowoc.com with a minute in between the manswalk and the dot.
There you go. Now, I was just going to talk about the type of humor that is depicted in these videos, your brother's videos here. But that comes kind of back to the Manitowoc Minute, which is there's a lot of regional humor, a lot of humor that's maybe even Wisconsin-specific or Midwest-specific, and maybe a little bit Battle of the Sexes or guys-type humor. And it kind of really got its going, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Manitowoc Minute was kind of the inception of this whole brand of humor for this company you got going.
That would be correct, yes. So I'm speaking for my brother on this part, correct. First and foremost.
Right.
But back in 2016, 2017, he really was starting to take off with this idea that there is a market for regional, mostly upper Midwest type humor, specifically going over the little da-das and do-dos of like how people speak, how people act, all that jazz. One thing that was really taking off was that he was a local reporter who has worked for many, many different platforms. And if there's one thing my brother knows, it is news. And a lot of people really like the wacky news, the weird things that kind of give a hint, kind of a intro as to the sensibilities of the Midwestern spirit.
Right.
So largely that just kind of comes down to the fact that we are so many small towns and small cities that are connected by a shared love for certain cultural and recreational activities. And that can be anything from fishing, hunting, driving, to the very words we say, Ope, let me just squeeze right past you, right. All that stuff. Every time I say those words, I have to pay my brother a nickel, so let me be careful.
And the Packers and things like that. Yeah.
Everyone gets their nickel nowadays. That's what we've learned in this business.
Yeah, I'll bet.
But going further into this, my brother started the Manitowoc Minute in 2017, and that consisted of a news program where he would review a weekly series of articles, of different videos. He would make commentary on it, have some jokes in between, but largely it's to give people a taste of what the Midwest is like.
Right.
Get an idea of how subtly crazy as a people we are.
Right.
And then at the very end, he also points out the Craigslist kicker, which is a local Craigslist posting that you genuinely would not find anywhere else.
Right.
We're talking things like people selling heavily modified vehicles, all of it built out of a shopping cart.
Nice.
People selling their own ice coolers that they made themselves, their own ice fishing gear that is definitely not up to industry standard, but hey, A plus for effort. You know what I mean?
Nice. So when did you start thinking about doing comedy, and were you inspired by what he was doing, or how did that work out for you?
You know, that does get kind of interesting. When I was in high school and in college, I liked to post jokes on my Facebook. Now, they were always long-winded, and they were kind of like a little bit too esoteric for me to be comfortable looking at again. But
that's the sign of a good joke. One you write, you never look at again.
Exactly, you know. Right? No, but that's really how it went. I learned a lot of comedy based off of, for one thing, watching other people's comedy. Mm-hmm. I've always been a big fan of like older styles of comedy. So like individuals like Leslie Nielsen, the Zucker Brothers, Airplane and The Naked Gun are some of my all-time favorite movies.
Right.
But also I've been a big fan of Mel Brooks. I have always had like a big fondness for the old style Rodney Dangerfield type of comedy. And in general, it's all very quick to the wall, rapid fire, even if like one of them misses, there's six more coming out right now. So just keep paying attention. And genuinely, I think that has helped me out a lot nowadays, because as a comedian nowadays, I like to think that like when it comes to telling jokes, it's really helpful to keep moving with the jokes, let them land. And I do struggle with giving them space to breathe.
Right. We just talked about that.
Yeah,
because there is that little bit of silence where you expected something. And so the instinct is to throw in a filler word or get onto the next joke, right? But sometimes people aren't quite paying attention. And so if you give them a little chance to kind of figure out what you just said, maybe you'll get some laughs you didn't expect.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this goes into more of my current career as a comedian. Mm-hmm. You learn so much from different people's methods of delivery and speaking. Mm-hmm. You can always tell who is a really good comedian largely by how good of a storyteller they are. Mm-hmm. And when they know to, if I'm going to borrow a word from architecture, the nulls and the voids, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Know when to give space for something to soak in, know when to use silence, when to use beats, and when to use filler words so people have time to process the jokes, as opposed to doing rapid fire, here's a joke, here's a punchline, on to the next one. Something that I like to do, but I'm always learning different methods right now.
Right.
I would think that the sort of rapid fire technique, if I were doing this, which I've never done that. I did improv, but I've never done stand up, but I would be really worried about bombing, and that's just something you can't be worried about if you're going to do that as a profession. But so I would think that if you're doing this rapid fire, it takes a little bit of the sting out of that one didn't land. Well, who cares? I'm moving on to the next one anyway. You know, there isn't that Chris, you were saying, maybe that awkward silence of I thought everybody would laugh at that, and now, I feel kind of silly up here, that kind of thing. But if you're rapid fire, then that takes that away.
I definitely think it's a compromise approach. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure you guys have heard this before. Bombing is the number one ritual for every comedian to go through.
Sure, right. Yep.
And this still affects people who have had 20, 30 years in the industry and have made their bones in Hollywood. they will still have sets that they absolutely bomb.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you can attribute it to a number of factors. Maybe it just wasn't their night. Maybe they were rushing. Maybe their heart wasn't into it. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were just phoning it. You can attribute it to any excuse, but long story short, bombing does happen to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think the number one person comedians don't trust is someone who claims that they never bomb.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jim and I have been to a couple of comedy shows. We saw Seinfeld twice, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
First time, it was hilarious. Second time, you could tell he was phoning it in. It just wasn't quite mm-hmm. the same. And he didn't bomb, per se, but it was both at the Riverside, I think. Mm-hmm. Two different vibes. You know, yeah, first one was like, energy. Wow, this is fun. Mm-hmm. This is great. Second one, like, he was doing the whole thing of, so what else? You know, and you're thinking, this guy has been doing this for mm-hmm. 40, 50 years, and he's like, okay, that's not working. What else? Yeah, right. Because he's going through his Rolodex. Let's find something that's going to work with these guys. You mm-hmm. know? And so it can happen. This is completely unrelated.
Go ahead.
You said that you'd never trust a comedian that says they never bomb. Back when I waited tables, there was always, you know, in the back room, people would talk about the tips they got. And there's always a person that claimed they got tons of tips, you know, twice as much as everybody else that same day. And you're thinking, how is that possible all the time that you always get twice as much tip as the rest of us? And I learned not to believe them. You know, I thought that they were lying, just like the comedian that never bombs is somebody that probably is making it up.
Yes. I think a lot of it just does come down to, in a show business like this, and this goes for almost all show businesses, there is a very delicate line between being earnest and then like wanting to be competent. First and foremost, you want people to know that you are a reliable performer,
right?
Someone who can be guaranteed to put on a good time every time. I do think it's really interesting how different people work with that, because I have seen some incredibly great comedians who will absolutely kill one show and then the next, nothing seems to be working for them. And the best comedians, when they recognize that, they will attempt to pivot, change course, or they will accept it and keep it going. They'll see the course through, mm-hmm. but they won't compromise the integrity of the show.
Mm. Yeah.
On the contrast, there are some comedians who do the opposite. They will blame everyone but themselves when a show isn't going their way. Mm-hmm. And as a producer, those aren't necessarily the comedians I want to be booking. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you book comedian? No, your brother gets up on stage. He's got how many people before him?
He typically has two individuals before him.
Now, we saw you open for your brother. Do you ever open for your brother on the road or no?
I do, yes.
You do, okay.
Primarily, I am his host. Whenever I am with him, usually I will do an opening 5-minute set. And the basic idea is that you guys know what the tight five is. Mm-hmm. In comedy, the tight five is your reliable 5 minutes that gets people to know who you are and kills in every single room consistently.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've usually like pinpointed this down to being like 3 sets of jokes. And the first one should be an introductory one. Mm-hmm. The second one should also be an introductory, but to a different facet of who you are, mm-hmm. as in how you perform, all that jazz. And right off the bat, you should be killing 3 or 4 minutes right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'll have like your jokes, you'll have tags, you'll have the setup, and you'll have like follow-up jokes afterwards or segues to go from like one point to the next. But lastly, you should have one really good joke that is always guaranteed to do very well in every single room and really wraps together not just the set, but it tells the audience, that's who I am.
Right.
Thank you for your time. And I will say, having been in the business for about 5 years, it took me the better part of 5 years to come up with a tight five that I was comfortable with. I would say that up until like last year, I was consistently changing it around, switching it up, up until it got to a point where I felt comfortable with making this my consistent set.
Wow. She shows you, I guess, how sometimes people think they can just get up there and, I could do that, you know.
Right.
But this takes a long time to really get a grasp for what you want to present as yourself and what people are going to accept in your audience as funny. I mean, it takes a long time, a lot of trial and error.
Most certainly.
Yeah.
I would say for the first 2-3 years I was doing comedy, And this was when I was doing comedy maybe once a week, once every other week. This is back in Appleton, where I started comedy at Skyline Comedy. It took me the better part of 3 years before I could get up on stage and not blank the whole way through. Like, when I could, like, actually recollect what I was saying on stage. Right. And a big part of that that helped was me recording myself afterwards. Even to this day, I will look at those recordings and I will think, oh, wow, like, this joke works really well, but I was so nervous I couldn't commit to this bit.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a lot about defeating your own demons by learning how to follow through, which is the same for every sport, the same for every activity. You can't just go for the flourish. You need to have the muscle of the swing through.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I heard it said, like with singing, you know, you might as well belt it out, right?
Exactly.
If you're going to get up there and sing, you might as well belt it out, because if you kind of half do it, it's not going to work as well. And so, like you said, commit to the joke. You might not feel that you've got the chops to have that attitude that the joke requires, but you got to fake it to make it, at least. You got to go for it, right? You can't.
100%.
Yeah.
Because the audience will feel that energy that, that you're holding back, and it just feels awkward then all of a sudden.
And you know, at every open mic, you'll have someone who thinks they're the next Bill Burr, or they'll think they're the next Lenny Bruce, where they think that right off the bat, they can get away with being offensive, being wandering, being tasteless. And at the very worst, it just devolves into them insulting the crowd and making people leave. But comedy's like every other art form where you absolutely can learn how to be subversive, but you have to learn the rules first before you can learn how to break them.
Because otherwise you get the audience against you. They sense that energy, you tighten up even more. People, like you said, can have a Bill Burr attitude, but the crowd's got to love them a little bit first.
Or love to hate you.
Yeah, right. You know, I've noticed in a similar vein at some of these, because I've, yes, Chris has been doing these things, I've gone to some of these open mic nights, and sometimes it feels like a common theme is people looking at the audience and saying, hey, you can laugh. You can laugh at this stuff. And what would be your response? What's my response? What do you think?
Personally, you don't want to like beg the audience to laugh or try and shame them into laughing.
Yeah.
But also, at an open mic night, you have to deal with the issue that there is such disruptive momentum going on.
Yeah. Everybody's thinking about their own set.
Yep. Exactly. And all it takes is one bad comedian to take three really good comedians' energies. Yeah. And if you have one really good comedian, they can also single-handedly resuscitate a really bad night where the energy has been absolutely awful because people don't know how to resuscitate that.
Yeah, yeah. John, I want to thank you for that compliment.
Oh,
thank you very much. Well, that was unsolicited. I want to thank you.
What can I say? I give the compliments I wish other people would tell me.
You know, my response to those people who say, you know, because literally, and, you know, because at these open mic nights, as you guys are just saying, most of these people there are just people who are getting ready to go up on stage, right? Well, since I'm not one of them, often I'm seen as the audience, right?
That would be a bingo.
Yeah. And so these people, sometimes the people literally point at me and say, you know, you can laugh at these jokes. And my response is, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Do something funny.
Make
you
me
know,
laugh.
Yeah. I would be laughing if you were funny. And I don't say that because I don't want to, I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to be mean to these people who are getting up there trying to be funny. But like, I'm not somebody who's going to sit. I'm not a stone-faced kind of person. Like, I'm ready to laugh. If you say something funny, I'm ready. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, don't tell me to shame me into laughing.
You know, one of our toughest open mics in the city is a mic we at the karaoke bar, the High Note. And the reason why it has been so tough historically is because this is a mic that takes place at a karaoke venue. Most of the folks there are there to sing, and we are there for an hour, 2 hours, and the most important thing you know is that these people are looking for any reason to shrug you off.
Yeah.
You can win them over, but you have to surprise them. You have to wow them, and most importantly, you cannot dismiss them.
Right. Yeah. You have to be nice, inclusive.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, let's wrap up the first half of this podcast. We got another one coming up, a little shorter one here where we're going to be I gave Jim an assignment. He's going to be leading this one here. So let's wrap that up again. The guest for the first half and the second half, John Behrens. Again, he is involved in production and editing for a lot of those videos that you're seeing on your phone from YouTube and TikTok that involve Charlie Behrens. It's a Behrens Brothers production. Whenever you see those Charlie Behrens clips, watch them all the way to the end. It helps the algorithm, right?
100%.
And go see the Behrens Brothers on tour all over the state here coming up very shortly.
ManitowocMinute.com. ManitowocMinute.com.
Get ManitowocMinute.com. We've got merch. We've got tour dates. All we need is you.
There we go.
There you go.
Join us next time on the Bait and Switch podcast when we quiz our guest, John Behrens, on ancient historical slang.
You've made it to the end of another Bait and Switch podcast. Spread the word.